FM CHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries.
Back to hot leads and cold cases with Nancy Duterte.
You're hot and you're cold.
Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-SOUL.
Welcome to everyone. Hot Leads, Cold Cases here at The Sky and the Para-X Network. I've got a great show in store for you tonight. And just like every other week, we've got a new and fascinating guest. And we're open for questions and comments during the show. So you can give us a call at 248-545-7685. Again, the number is 248-545-SOUL. We have open lines right now. Also, a few options over on the web here at The Sky. It is newskyradio.com. Right there on the homepage, look for the instant feedback. And everyone listening to us over at the Para-X Network, if you're on the chat room, that's another great way to get through a question or a comment for tonight's show. Just keep in mind, you can find Nancy away from the show. She's over at theskepticalpsychic.com. So find out who we have in store for everyone tonight. It's going to be a good show. Nancy, we'll get it to you.
Okay, thank you, Brandon. I got to ask you a really weird question, all right?
Okay, like the whale question, right?
No, this is going to be even stranger.
Okay, sure.
Have you had any experiences in the last couple of weeks with knowing people who have been dying?
Let's see here.
You have to count them. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
The reason why I'm asking, okay, is because it seems particularly bizarre to me, and I was because my guest tonight actually is on the show because we have a mutual friend who was previously supposed to be on the show who had a death in the family. Now, that would not ordinarily be so strange to me, except that I think I must know at least seven people in the last week and a half who have died. Either I've known them personally, I've been to a funeral, my husband's been to a different funeral, there have been a bunch of funerals. I've known two people who they have pets who are, I mean, the pets were at least 20 years old, a cat and a dog, different people, unrelated. So there's been this very peculiar thing going on. And I spoke with a friend of mine who is a psychic medium, and she said something else very strange had happened to her, that she is all of a sudden seeing hundreds of people in spirit showing up and giving information. And I thought, that's really bizarre. It's almost like there's this weird portal that's been opened for a reason I can't quite figure out. And as I was driving on my way here, just before the show, I never had this happen in my entire life. There was a, it appeared to be a gray dog, and it jumped out in the middle of the road on the driver's side. I veered just about off the road, and the thing disappeared like smoke. It was a ghost dog. And I thought, how bizarre. That's never happened before. Anyway, I thought maybe you might have had a similar type of experience, but who knows what's going on. But anyway, I want to get to tonight's show because I have a lot to talk about. This is somebody who I have wanted to speak with actually for a very long time. And his name is Travis Walton. And I'm very happy to have him on the show. If you don't know about him already, he is probably the most famous UFO abductee on the planet today. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you his story because he's told it about a million times over the last almost 40 years now. It's been 37 years since this happened. And I think at a certain point you get exhausted telling your own story. So I'm going to tell his story and he can fill in whatever he wants to. And I want to talk about it and about some of his impressions. So this happened back in 1975. He was only 22 years old. And if you haven't already seen, there's a movie made about his experience. It was a 1993 movie called Fire in the Sky. And it's all about this extraordinary experience. And what happened was he was working out in Arizona with a logging team. They were doing logging in a it was a national forest. There were seven men working together. It was near Turkey Springs, Arizona. So they wrap up their work. They're driving home in their truck in the evening, about, I think it was around 6 p.m. and they spot this sort of strange silvery lit disc that was hovering about 20 feet in, it was 20 feet in diameter, hovering, I guess, right above the tree line. All of them are terrified except for my guest tonight, Travis Walton. So he jumps out of the truck. He wants to get a better look. And by all of their subsequent accounts, he gets hit with a beam of light that emanates from this UFO and knocks him down from the impact. Everyone else is scared to death. They take off. They think he's dead. They take off, you know, rolling in this truck as fast as they can. They go about a quarter of a mile. They finally stop. They reconsider. They go back to look for him, but by that time, he's nowhere to be found, and everybody's mystified. He doesn't reappear for about 5 days, during which time his fellow crew members were subjected to all kinds of very intense treatment by law enforcement, since everybody assumed they were trying to cover up a murder, maybe an accidental death, and that they weren't talking, and they're making up this ridiculous story about a UFO. So during Travis's absence, the national media gets a hold of the story. The whole place gets flooded with reporters. And then 5 days later, around midnight, I believe, Travis's brother-in-law gets a call from Travis, who says that he's hurt, he needs help, and he's in a telephone booth in a small town near a gas station. And you know, by all accounts, Travis is terrified. He speaks a little bit about seeing beings with very large eyes. He had no idea where he'd been for several days. He was wearing the same clothing, and it was about 20 degrees outside, and, you know, it was cold. He couldn't keep his food down. He was obviously very, very upset by the entire thing, and his family tried to shield him from the prying eyes of the sheriff's office, the media, law enforcement, and everybody gets accused of trying to pull off some enormous prank. And so that it sort of was insult to injury for this whole thing. It later came to light that Travis had memories of being aboard a UFO. He describes the interior. He talks about how he was surrounded by these 3-foot-tall sort of typical grays with large eyes. He ran from the exam room. He goes into something he describes like a sort of planetarium-like cockpit room where he can see the stars on all sides, on all the walls. And then he gets approached by a humanoid who brings him down a ramp. And now he appears to be in some type of a huge, almost like an airplane hangar, and he sees another flying saucer parked there. He's met by several other humanoids. They put a mask on his face, like an oxygen mask, and that's the last thing he remembers before he ends up waking up near this gas station. So that's what I want to talk to him about. And hopefully, Travis, I've saved you the trouble of telling your story again. But welcome to the show.
Oh, nice to be with you.
Okay, good. So let me ask you something. I know that there was some discussion or criticism way back when, I guess your brother had told the media, and he meant well when he said it, because they had asked whether you all were interested in UFOs. And he said that you and he actually had both shared an interest in UFOs. And I guess this was sort of used as a – it was used against you later. But
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the idea back then, even among ufologists, was that the only credible cases were people who saw one thing in a lifetime. Anyone else was called a repeater, and those were cases that were not regarded as so credible. But nowadays, you know, as soon as people find out I've only had one experience, they keep prying and pushing. Come on, haven't you? You know, everybody that has an experience has them from the time they're little, and you know, it's an ongoing thing, and it's, you know, and so it's kind of gone 360 or 180 degrees. You know, from what it was back then, the idea was that it was really kind of odd that my brother had had a sighting 8 or 10 years before. Well, you know, surveys even at the time said that 1 out of 7 Americans had had a sighting.
Right.
So the idea that a family of 7 like mine would have had someone else have had a sighting was not some suspicious coincidence, but actual statistical expectation that you would have, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And obviously they were trying to imply that because you had an interest, it meant that you were fantasizing.
Yeah, yeah. That it was some kind of an extension of some, you know, they even went so far as to say, he not only came from a UFO family, he came from a UFO culture. And he's trying to, they were trying to imply that this was some big thing in this community, which is just laughable, you know, because it would be, if anything, much to the contrary, as far as, you know, people who hadn't seen something being a believer. But the truth is, you know, like I said, 1 out of 7 people have seen it, and that's, it's really fairly uniformly distributed across the world, and with maybe an emphasis on more rural areas, you know, because I think that these beings, you know, or this activity prefers remote areas just because, you know, they can, or it's more clandestine sort of a situation for them.
Yeah. And,
you know, they're not obviously coming down and announcing their presence in a very, you know, outright way.
Well, yes, and I think that I would like to talk to you about that also. But we got to take a quick break. Everybody stay with us. We have a lot more to talk about. My guest this evening is Travis Walton, and you're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases.
At Talent, our family treasure, we create dolls, jewelry, eggs, and decorations. We believe in beauty and kindness beyond measure. At Talent, our family treasure. Shop at talentoft.com. Or find us on Amazon.com at Talent, our family treasure.
Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Dutertra.
One thing leads to another. Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-7685. Believe.
And we're back, Hot Leads, Cold Cases, here at the Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries, and the Para-X Network. Very pleased to have our guest join us tonight, Travis Walden. If any of you out there had questions or comments for the show, 248-545-7685, 248-545-SOUL. You can also send instant feedback at the homepage of newskyradio.com. And a quick question or comment can be sent through the Para-X chat room as well. For now, we'll get things back over to Nancy and Travis.
All right, great. And I will read her at that. Here's your chance. You want to ask Travis Walton a question. You got your opportunity now. I would go for it. So, Travis, what we were saying before the break was that this your UFO experience happened in this very remote area. It was a, I guess, forested sort of mountainous area and it's in Arizona. I did a little background checking, and I found that actually Arizona ranks – pretty high in UFO sightings. It's 16 out of the 50 states. And in the year that you saw or you had your UFO experience, there were actually 12 UFO sightings in Arizona that year, which is one of the highest number of sightings for Arizona. I guess.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Phoenix Lights was a very dramatic sighting, which just coincidentally was one solar cycle after the release of the movie Fire in the Sky. But, you know, that's in keeping with what I was saying about the seeming greater incidence of these kinds of things happening in more remote areas.
Well,
I recently gave a talk in New Mexico to a group of like 900 Native Americans, and they had some very interesting reports for things that happened way back on the reservation, you know, that really hasn't been, you know, made known publicly for, you know, they're generally very private about such things in the past, but beginning to open up more.
Absolutely. In fact, I have friends who were Native Americans up in the Canadian side, and they tell me the same thing. They have tons of experiences, and they are extremely private about it. When do you think this thing is sort of going to bust wide open and everybody's going to start talking about their UFO experiences?
Well, you know, I was recently on the Kardashians, and, you know, I was kind of treated with a great deal of skepticism from Bruce Jenner, and people came on the Internet and was really slamming him. I guess, you know, the perception that ha, 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 most people don't believe this, really isn't the way it is anymore. The truth is the majority of people do believe it, and eventually there's going to be a tipping point where the people who are ridiculed are the people who are insisting that we're alone in the universe.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that actually one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you know, here we are 37 years later after you've had your experience. And I wanted to know if you really feel when you go out there, you're talking now to lots of groups of people, you know, whether there's a you can feel a difference in the attitude. Do people react to you differently?
Oh, yeah. Even locally, you know, the turmoil and, you know, the skepticism that was generated initially has really, you know, started to, you know, go the other way. I mean, I've had a lot of local people come up and you know, confide the sightings that they had and, you know, and state that they had always believed me. So, but, you know, something they had been afraid to say before because everybody goes on the assumption that nobody believes this but me. And the truth is, most people believe this, or, you know, the majority anyway.
Yeah, and I think that you're getting more and more sightings and more reported sightings.
Yeah, that's important, and, you know, and there's a tremendous amount of documentaries that have been done over the, in the last 38 years. I've done dozens of them, but the very best one that was done was a 90-minute special that the Sci-Fi Channel did called Paranormal Witness about my case, and I think, you know, that's had a profound effect on people. But, you know, back when this happened, they didn't really know of a single planet outside our solar system, and now with the Hubble telescope, they've actually identified, you know, thousands, and even I've been able to figure out which ones are, you know, likely to be life supporting. So, you know, just last year, NASA said that it's a virtual certainty that here within our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, that there are more planets than stars. And of course, we always knew that there was billions of stars. So that, the, you know, the routineness of space travel, the shuttle missions, you know, back with the lunar missions, you know, the world was glued to their TV set, and it got to be where with shuttle missions, it didn't really generate the kind of attention that it used to. It's a part of the norm, I guess.
Let me ask you, a couple of days ago, I think NASA finally, they said they have been able to identify at least five planets now relatively close by that have water. Do you think that NASA or some larger organizational group is attempting to prepare us for some understanding about extraterrestrials or UFOs or our place in the universe?
Well, you know, just the truth that's coming out, you know, is having a conditioning effect on world societies, whether it's intended or not. And, you know, it's my opinion that if these entities really wanted to, they could go about everything they're doing here and be completely unknown to us. It seems to me that the degree of provability of these sightings is a gradual, incremental sort of conditioning program to get us used to the idea without something so overt, you know, as you know, the why aren't they landing on the White House lawn kind of a thing, you know.
Would you ever want to... I have to tell you, I mean, I've read your book, Fire in the Sky, The Walton Experience. It's a fabulous book. I recommend it. I have seen the movie that was done, I believe, based on your book. And it was sort of mind-blowing to see what you experienced in terms of you had actual face-to-face contact with a number of different beings. And I'm wondering... And I'm sure people ask you this all the time. I mean, would you want to meet them again? Do you have any desire?
Well, you know, if I could resolve some of the major questions in my mind without, you know, any of the danger and trauma that I, you know, at least believed I was in at the time, you know, yeah, but whether I would go public with that or not, I might have second thoughts about that because, you know, it's no longer debatable that the trauma of the experience really has been eclipsed by the people's reaction to it over the years. You know, it just really, it really was an unpleasant experience to be, you know, treated in the way that I was.
Yes.
People were desperate to explain this away any way they could, and if it meant disparaging me and my family and in the community here, you know, all the better. It didn't matter, and. I think the disinformation campaign, you know, came from, I believe that there was probably an organized effort to sort of discredit it and put it down. And it was only recently with the acquiring some Freedom of Information Act documents that I'm even more convinced of that.
Can you talk about what you've acquired?
Well, my chief detractor... it turns out, with his FBI file, was under investigation by the FBI for having revealed classified information. Well, rather than prosecuting him, there's a memo in his file from J. Edgar Hoover turning the entire matter over to the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, this is from the director of the FBI to the director of the CIA, which, you know, before 9/11... were notorious for not communicating with each other. And it's my belief that they withheld prosecution because, you know, this is a standard recruiting tactic to get some leverage on people to, you know, sort of guide their activities and direct them. I don't believe that they turned him into a UFO skeptic or debunker, but certainly could bankroll things and direct his efforts.
Are you by any chance talking about Philip Klass?
That's who I'm talking about.
Okay. So that our listeners understand who he was, because he really was sort of like your arch nemesis in experience, I think.
Oh, yeah. He never, ever, in all those years before he passed away, made any attempt to write to me or telephone me or contact me in any way, although he made me part of several books and dozens of papers he released to the media attacking me and really using some very, you know, unsavory tactics. You know, he called all the bars in town looking for bad stories about me when they told him he never comes in here at all. He doesn't report that, you know. Only anything he can gather that's negative. You know, he finally dug up somebody who would call my mother a liar and just completely omitted the fact that she was voted Woman of the Year for her community service. It's that kind of selective reporting and even altering of taped evidence, you know. Like there was a comment in another book that the crew boss had said that if Steve Pierce, you know, actually took the bribe money that Philip Klass had offered, even though he knew it really happened and would do it just for the money, then he'd be bruised. Well, Philip Klass reports this and takes out the part in the middle, even though you know it really happened, do it just for the money, and just said, well, if you do this, you'll be bruised, which, you know, was to kind of reverse the meaning, you know, to try to make it look like Mike was threatening one of the crew members to keep him from recanting, when actually it was the entire opposite. And, you know, it's all the kind of altered quotations and selective reporting and just a whole lot of really distorted things that, even though he had evidence to the contrary, and we knew he had it, he would report otherwise. So a lot of devious tactics, and now that we have the FBI file, it kind of shows where it was really coming from.
But, and it's a shame, too, because he had, you know, by all appearances, you know, a very outstanding career. He was senior avionics editor of Aviation Weekly and Space Technology in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the founding members of PSYCOP, which is the Professional Skeptics and Debunkers Organization. So obviously he had that as a starting point. But, you know, to go after you with that degree of viciousness is kind of amazing. And I think it speaks volumes about what's been going on in this entire field now for quite a while. We got to take another quick break, though. Travis, stay with us. Everybody else, stay with us. You're listening to Hot Leaves Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Travis Walton.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Yeah.
KMPS Radio's The New Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries.
Back to Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Dutertra.
You're hot, then you're cold. Yes, then you're no. You're in, then you're out. You're up, then you're down.
Call Nancy Dutertra now.
248-545-SOUL.
And we're back to the halfway point. Hot Leads Cold Cases here at the Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries, and the Para-X Network. Very happy to be joined by our guest tonight, Travis Walton. And again, questions, comments, open lines, 248-545-7685. Again, 248-545-SOUL. Of course, we have the instant feedback as well. That's at newskyradio.com. And over at the Para-X chat room, it's another great way to send a question or comment through to the show. Of course, remember, you can find our host, Nancy, away from the show. Check out theskepticalpsychic.com. And that's who we'll send it back to right now, your host, Nancy, and our guest tonight, Travis.
All right. Thanks, Brandon. You know, before we do have a question from the chat room, but before I get to that, I just want to follow up on what we were talking about before, which is your nemesis and debunker par excellence. I mean, this guy just didn't stop, Philip Klass. And I ran across something I thought was kind of extraordinary. In 1983, he published something that he called The Last Will and Testament of Philip J. Klass. And it read, "To ufologists who publicly criticize me or even think unkind thoughts about me in private, I do hereby leave and bequeath the UFO curse. No matter how long you live, you will never know any more about UFOs than you know today. You will never know any more about what UFOs really are or where they come from. You will never know any more about what the U.S. government really knows about UFOs than you know today. As you lie on your own deathbed, you will be as mystified about UFOs as you are today, and you will remember this curse." So I was absolutely astounded when I read that, because I thought, for somebody who gets involved in something and debunking it like crazy, who, you know, ostensibly is a scientist or of sorts, to put out a curse to make sure nobody ever understands anything about UFOs. What do you make of that?
I think he's being sarcastic, but I think it's going to fail miserably. The guy was a piece of work. You know, it was really some kind of a personal psychic. Psychological obsession of his, you know, that, you know, like I said, if he was guided by government bankrolling, that's one thing, but he definitely went far beyond anything that logic or reason or science would ever dictate. Just totally selective in what he wants to consider evidence or not. There's all sorts of physical evidence at the site, you know, radiation readings, magnetic readings, an accelerated growth of the trees nearest to where the craft came down. And at the time that the crew were accused of murder and they passed the polygraph test, the president of the American Polygraph Association said that the odds were 1,000,000 to 1 of there being any error, you know, even though polygraph's not perfect. When you have 6 people passing tests on a single issue, the odds were over 1,000,000 to 1 of there being any mistake. But now there's been over 16 passed tests in regard to this incident. I've passed 5 different tests from 3 different examiners with many years of law enforcement experience. And this is the kind of thing that the skeptics love to ignore.
Well, do you think what he said, which is we're never ever really going to know anything about UFOs, do you believe that?
Well, you know, we know so little, and I think that's by design. It's not just the secrecy of our government agencies. They may know a little more than us, but I think that it's possible that they're having a certain amount of it withheld from them, too. But overall, they might be right, you know, that sudden, incontrovertible proof tomorrow would be extremely disruptive to societies, economic, social, religious, and, you know, as far as religious is concerned, I think that's unnecessary. I don't think there's anything about the existence of life on other worlds that contradicts any religion. And, you know, I've been contacted by people from a wide variety of religions, and some of them will say, I don't believe you because this contradicts my religion, and people from the same religion will say, you know, this must be true because it fits right in with my religion. So, you know, I've often commented that there are 7 billion different religions on planet Earth.
Yes. And I think also the fear that religion would be inconsistent with this type of reality is sort of an overreaction. Let me ask you, we got we have a question from Paula in the chat room over at Para X, and she wants to know, do you believe the aliens are from another galaxy or perhaps another dimension?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because I have accepted the term aliens and, you know, that sort of thing, but actually I had no sort of communication from them that solidly told me they were aliens from another planet. They could just as well have been from another dimension, our past or our future. But I do believe that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is the most likely. And where was I going with that?
Well, let me ask you another question. Did you, when you were on the craft and you had this experience, were you able to touch them or smell them? And I ask you about smell specifically because I've spoken with somebody who gets regular contact and said that, and he's been talking about grays in particular, that he says they have a particular smell.
Well, you know, I think because of the nature of my injury, that the majority of that blast of energy, whether it was electrical or whatever it was, hitting me in the head and chest may have interfered with my sense of smell, because I do recall it being very stale and humid, but a particular odor, I just really don't have a memory of that. But
what about touch?
One other term that I've accepted is a term abduction, but in many reports, you know, what happened to me doesn't really fit in with the common report. And I think that's because rather than it being an actual quote-unquote abduction, it was more what you would call an ambulance call, that I basically got close and caused injury to myself that made it necessary for them to take me aboard, simply because the nearest hospital was over an hour away. And if it was as mild as, say, cardiac arrest, because, you know, this was a powerful blast of energy, and, you know, the crew immediately were screaming to each other, he's dead, it killed him, because it was so violent, far more violent than the movie portrayed. If they had just left me there, you know, it would have been fatal, I'm sure. And so that, to me, suggests now, after many years of thinking about this, that it wasn't some kind of, you know, intentional abduction where they're just going to do experiments on me and torment me, you know, that it was really just trying to take me aboard for the purpose of reviving me.
A lot of people with close encounters or near sightings, they very often talk about getting radiation burns or intense sunburns or suntans. Did you get any type of radiation poisoning?
No, there was no sign of that upon my return, and I had a lot of thorough medical exams. Although the crew had their hard hats tested by researchers at the site during the search in the days immediately after it, that did have high radiation readings, four times that of background, double that of a radium dial watch. So there was radiation there, but no sign of that in me with the many tests that I underwent. But I did undergo one test, the brainwave scan, the EEG, from probably the best in the world, was at Barrow's Neurological Institute, a world-famous brain trauma hospital in Phoenix, Arizona. And they discovered an unusual wave pattern there. And this is especially pertinent because of the intense media attention, I was put in there by the doctor under an assumed name. So the technician did not know who I was or what the nature of the injury that he was looking for was. So I'm going to follow up on that. There's going to be another EEG to see if that odd pattern is still there. And I'm thinking that that odd pattern might be what prevented them from being able to control me. The reason I was able to get off the table, the reason I was able to resist their attempts to regain control.
Well, isn't that an interesting idea? What, I mean, do you have any theories about what type of the a wave it would have to be in order to prevent that?
Well, all I know is that what was described by the technician as looking, you know, suggestive of some kind of injury is some, I have the report, but it's some wording some along the lines of alternating bisynchronous wave traveling from front to back. And that, so, you know, there's twofold follow-ups here. You know, to have the same EEG charts examined by another neuroscientist to see if there's some significant comparisons to, say, lightning victims or people who have experienced high intention wires or, you know, something along those lines, and then to see if it's still there. Of course, even if it is still there, there's no way to know if it wasn't there prior to the incident, rather than being the result of the energy that hit me.
Right.
But there has to be some explanation that I was able to get off that table. And again, when they came around the table towards me, and they were those eyes of all three of them were staring at me and boring into me in this unbearable, you know, intrusive, invasive sort of feeling, it had this squirmy, horrible feeling in my brain that, you know, it was the subject of my nightmares. That was the main thing that I had nightmares about for so long after the incident. And I think it was because they were combining their efforts to try to regain control on, for whatever reason, it wasn't working. So the idea that the energy caused it is a, you know, a good theory.
I think that's a very interesting theory, and I'm going to tell you why, but we got to take another break, unfortunately. So everybody stay with us. You're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Travis Walton.
At Talent, our family treasure, we create dolls, jewelry, eggs, and decorations. We believe in beauty and kindness beyond measure. At Talent, our family treasure. Shop at talentoft.com or find us on amazon.com. At Talent, our family treasure.
Who wants to be right as the rain is better when something is wrong? You get the excitement in your bones and everything you do's a game. When night comes and you're on your own, you can say I chose to be alone. Wants to be right as the rain, it's harder when you're on top. Cause when hard work don't pay off and I'm tired, there ain't no home in my bed as far as I'm concerned. So wipe that dirty smile off, we won't be making up. I've cried my heart out, now I've had enough. Everything you are, and even then you don't get far. They make believe that everything is exactly what it seems, but at least when you're at yours, you know how to build things. See, when hard work don't pay off and I'm tired, there ain't no home in my bed as far as I'm concerned. So wipe that dirty smile off, won't be making up. I've cried my heart out, now I've had enough. Oh, go ahead and steal my heart to make me cry again. 'Cause
we're both right and no one had blame. But now I give up on this endless game. 'Cause who wants to be right? Does the rain is better when something is wrong? I get excitement in my bones even though everything's a strain. When night comes in,
Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte. Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-7685.
And we're back. I want to thank our guests tonight, Travis Walton, for being on the show, as well as everyone that listened in. Hot Leads Cold Cases here at the Sky. New Horizons, no boundaries. Just one more reminder. You can find our host, Nancy, away from the show. Make sure you check out theskepticalpsychic.com. So this is our final segment. We'll get things right back over to Nancy and Travis.
All right. The thing that I wanted to mention before, Travis, is you were saying that perhaps this altered brainwave pattern that you seem to have, and you don't know whether you had it before your UFO incident or whether it was a result of maybe being hit by that beam of light or whatever, but you were suggesting that maybe that's what prevented them from suppressing you and keeping you in that exam room or whatever, and that you were able to get up and sort of fight your way out of there. And it occurred to me, I had this very odd, let's call it a dream, and it was fairly recent. I was in a car not far from here, and I was driving, and a door opened, and an alien jumped in the seat. And I looked at the alien. The alien looked at me, and I thought, uh-oh, you know, this can't be good. And I was thinking, well, I'm going to jump out. But then I thought, no, by virtue of that sort of telepathic control, I was doomed. So I looked at this alien, and this alien was looking at me, and I said, wait a second. I know, I have been trained in psychic skills, let me put it that way, and I generated a blast of psychic energy towards this creature or being, whatever it was, and broke the connection. And that was the end of my dream. Now, so that's why I find what you were saying very, very interesting. I understand that you've become rather psychic, as have many people who have these experiences since then. And I'm wondering if that's, I mean, what's happened to you, or how have your skills improved?
Well, that's something I've really been reluctant to comment too much about because, you know, I never wanted to be the subject of study, you know. The sight, that's okay. The incident, that's okay. But I don't want to be the bug in the jar. That's what my experience was, in a way. The feeling I had at the time was the bug in the jar, especially, you know, in the immediate aftermath with the way the media treated it.
No, I understand that, and I would certainly respect that. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be a bug in the jar because you have, well, I guess, and many,
you know,
other.
I've already, you know, had some firsthand experience with the way people react to that kind of stuff. It can be extremely alarming in some circumstances for someone to know something they're not supposed to know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because many of my mentors have had that experience. Many of my friends, I've had that experience also. People cannot stand the idea that you can read their minds, but they don't get it. It's all out there. It's all available. It's just a matter of tapping into it. Well, let me ask you this. If you don't want to talk about your own personal stuff, I mean, do you have any ideas why that would be a skill, these psychic skills, that would be improved after an encounter with ETs?
Well, you know, I was recently being filmed for the 701, the movie, theatrical UFO documentary, and I had an opportunity to talk with some of the schoolmates from Zimbabwe, the school children that experienced a mass sighting. 60 children had these beings come out and communicate to them. There seems to be some correlation to the stare, the eyes, but these children reported, you know, communication by that means. And it may be that just that experience opens them up in a way that, you know, the pattern is remembered.
Oh, that's an interesting idea, that you could actually keep and again, I think this goes back to electrical patterns within the brain. That's why I thought what you said was so interesting, but that you could keep that sort of stored as a memory, as a way to perceive the world.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, just use the analogy that, say, if you had an appendage that, you know, had nerves traveling from your brain to this appendage, but you never knew you had it, and you suddenly found you could move, you know, wings or whatever this other appendage would be, a tail or something. You know, once you realized you could do it, then, you know, you'd be able to repeat that again.
Do you think if everybody exercised their psychic skills or abilities, we would have a better society?
Oh, yeah, I think that's kind of the future of communication, because it eliminates deception and dishonesty, and it also takes down the perception of threat when there isn't any. So, you know, that creates a lot of problems, too, you know. A person with good intentions is still, they're still wary, and, you know, people coming together on issues need to, you know, have a full understanding of each other.
In retrospect, here we are, you know, almost 40 years later, do you think that the intentions of the extraterrestrials or the aliens, whatever you want to call them, who you dealt with, do you have a way of classifying where people like to put them into, you know, boxes, good or evil? Or,
oh, yeah, I get that question all the time. People say, what is the alien agenda? And I say, well, it's agendas in the plural. I do not believe that there's one single species, even the ones that are so-called grays. I think that there's probably a number of species that are probably from completely different planets that fit that general description and get lumped into this term grays, you know, a term that didn't exist back when this happened. But I imagine they all have different appearances. You know, Stan Friedman uses the analogy of you're walking through the airport. Do you think all the people in that airport are going to the same place or have the same agenda at their destination? And, you know, I think that's kind of a good analogy to kind of describe what might be going on here. Different people, different ideas. In my case, I have accumulated, you know, several points that suggest to me that for me that it was benevolent, that it wasn't malevolent, and you know, that's just in my case.
Yeah.
If there was time to get into all the reasons why for that, you know, just the fact that I was returned at all, and to a place where I could get help, and rather than being dumped, you know, on some asteroid or even just back in the woods where it happened, I would have froze to death before I could get help. So
I agree with you, because when I finally looked at a map and I saw the town where they left you off, I said, that makes perfect sense. They're benevolent. At any rate, we are completely out of time. I hope maybe you'll come back again, because I have lots more questions.
Yeah, they can contact me at traviswalton.com, and that's the only place to get the book, too. So.
Okay, and the book is Fire in the Sky, The Walton Experience. I recommend it. It's really quite fascinating, and I really appreciate you coming on the show, Travis.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks. Good night, everybody.